In this week's episode, we take a look at the journey of Zacamole. 20 years later, does it still have a bad rap and is it deserved? We also look at the path forward around the OpenID Foundation's new policy charter and what that means for how we think about authorization. And last but not least, we talk about all things policy, how it relates to authorization and how it doesn't. Join us for all that and more. Hey everyone, and welcome back. Episode 2. I am Kelly O'Dwyer-Emanuel, the Vice President of Brand and Communications for Axiomatics. And with me, as always, is our talented and thoughtful CTO, David Brassard. Hey David, how's it going?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. How about you?
I am hanging in there. So today, there's always any number of things we could talk about, but today I wanted to focus on something that I saw last week, which is that we are, over 20 years since the advent of Zacamole. So a heck of a lot has changed in that amount of time. And the way we look at all things authorization, particularly from a language perspective, is certainly very much different beast. So wanted to just pick your brain, David, on, you know, what does that journey with Zacamole look like? I know there's good, there's bad. There's all sorts of things that come to mind for folks when they talk about Zacamole. So what is that journey for you? What do you take away from that?
So it's the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? I think we need a bit of background music now. yeah, like you said, it's been over 20 years. Oasis was where Zacamole was born. Both Samuel and Zacamole were born at the same time in 2001. And it was the heyday of SOA, service-oriented architecture. It was the heyday of SOAP-based web services. And back then, people were like, oh, well, now that everything is distributed, now that we have a standard way of integrating with these web services, they weren't called APIs yet, right? And REST was not even a thing. Well, now we need to rebuild everything. We need to rebuild reliable messaging, eventing, authentication, we need to build federation. That was not a thing at the time, right? That's where Samuel came in. And of course, we need to build access control. And that's why we came up with Zacamole, the extensible access control market language at the time. And you know, it only took a couple of years for the first version to come out, and I think the third version, Zacamole 3.0, which is the mainstream version, I think it was ratified in 2010 or maybe a little later than that. I can't quite remember. Our founder is the editor of that version of that language. And it's been great. Like the model, Kelly, hasn't changed at all. You know, yes, there are a lot of new initiatives and new languages out there, and that's really exciting. And we'll talk about that later. But what's good to know is that the architecture behind Zacamole hasn't changed one bit. And in fact, if you look at what NIST has done with ABAC, with attribute-based access control, and the formal definition of ABAC, they took that architecture verbatim and put it in their standard. That's really inspiring and good to know that Zacamole got that right.
For sure. So, I mean, I know there are people out there who think of it as kind of long in the tooth. Is that a fair assessment, David, or is it really just anything that would have been technologically speaking around for that length of time would probably be hit with that similar stigma?
It's a bit of both. Okay. I think overall, and I'm biased, of course, I think it's unfair. I think a lot of the disregard or disdain, I was going to say hatred is really too harsh a word, but a lot of the disdain for Zacamole comes from the fact that it's XML based, and that there's this misunderstanding that you're expected to write Zacamole by hand. No one would ever write Zacamole by hand. I don't think anyone of us at Axiomatics knows how to do that, and we're the experts in Zacamole, right? The truth is you need tooling that abstracts away from the underlying syntax, and that's what detractors of Zacamole, they didn't want to see that. They said, oh my God, you got to write XML, and XML is so wordy. I mean, there's things like JSON and YAML these days. Do that instead. So I think that was the main criticism. But like I said, you know, Zacamole defined three things. It defined a policy language, it defined an architecture, it defined a request response scheme. The architecture, like I said, is very good, very mature. It is still very much being used not only by NIST, but also by newer frameworks like Open Policy Agent, like AWS Cedar, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then the request response scheme, it's pretty good. Of course, only focuses on one type of use case, which is what I like to call binary or transactional authorization. Can I do this? Yes, you can. No, you can't. It doesn't really focus on other things like open-ended authorization, like what can I do? That's things that we can actually fix in future standards. And I know that, Kelly, you mentioned that you wanted to discuss the policy charter at OpenID Foundation, and we can get to that when the time comes.
Well, that time is now, in fact. I was just going to say, you know what, it's great to be able to talk about the evolution and the history and all of that, because certainly as much as there's now a lot of attention paid to authorization, both from a language's standards and processes and frameworks standpoint, and boy, that was a mouthful, it's been around for a while, so it's important to look at the evolution there. But I know there's some exciting things that are coming up, David, and you've been very, very much involved in a lot of that. So do you want to share a little bit about what you're doing with the OpenID Foundation policy charter and some of that stuff?
For sure. And one thing I forgot to mention is that the use cases Zach Will wanted to solve 20 years ago are still the exact same use cases. And one thing that I really like about policy and policy-driven authorization is the whole idea that you take a plain old English requirement, something along the lines of insurance claims processors can only approve a claim in the region they belong to and under or up to an amount that they're allowed for. So these plain old English requirements, they map directly into the technical policy artifact. Now, whether that technical artifact is ZACMUL or REGO from Open Policy Agent or Cedar from AWS or another language that I'm not thinking of now, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that there's a close relationship, a close mapping between the plain old English and the technical implementation, as opposed to what you would have had, or what you would have with a role-based or entitlements-based approach, where you're gonna have to go through role engineering, and that creates a lot of friction, a lot of loss of meaning, and a lot of need for governance and provisioning processes to assign entitlements and roles to individuals and remove them from those individuals. So with that being said, if we look at what's happening, so back in 2015, Open Policy Agent started with their language. Great initiative, focuses more on the infrastructure side of things. And then more recently, about a year ago at Identiverse 2022, a bunch of folks got together to discuss the future of authorization. We met again in Vegas, Identiverse 2023, and we got together to create something called the Policy Charter under the umbrella of the OpenID Foundation. And the whole goal of Policy Charter is essentially to get everyone to agree, not only authorization vendors like Axiomatics, but also non-authorization vendors, get them to agree, get us to agree to what a request response schema would look like so that we can achieve greater interoperability. We're not really touching the policy. I think we're at a point where if you want to write ZACMUL or ALPHA, the abbreviated language for authorization, or REGO or CEDAR, go ahead and pick your poison. That's okay. They're all good ABAC languages, and we'll be able to manage those and correlate those. What matters more is the request response, how you ask a question, how you get an answer back. And definitely we can leverage the work done within the ZACMUL Technical Committee, within the Open Policy Agent Framework, within other initiatives, because they're very similar, right? So it's a matter of streamlining that work. And then it's also a matter of going out to software vendors and SaaS developers and telling them, hey guys, instead of implementing your own homegrown authorization, how about you expose an interface, much like you did for authentication and SAML and OpenID Connect. Do the same for authorization, and then we'll come in, plug right into your interface and let you do authorization in a much easier way. Sorry, that was a very, very long mouthful, Kelly.
Wait, but it's good. And it feels like, David, that this is, and I know you'll hold me to account for saying this, but it feels like this is a pretty big, I'm going to say it, watershed moment for authorization, that we're looking at things for this market in this way, that we're no longer looking at it from which language is better, OPA or Zacmel or Alpha or whatever it is, we're looking at it from that kind of holistic, broader, what is the problem we're trying to solve point of view. And that's huge.
It is, absolutely. So there's this realization that different individuals, different profiles, if you will, like to write with different languages. So I think we can all agree that the XML syntax of Zacmel is too verbose to be written by hand, but we do know that developers still want to write languages by hand. So they want to write Rego by hand. So it has to be a syntax that is easy to write. So Rego was one attempt, or is a very good attempt. Alpha, the abbreviated language for authorization, same thing, very good attempt at making a language easy to remember, easy to write, easy to read, easy to understand. Cedar, similar things, right? So it's all about saying, okay, pick the language that you prefer and start writing in that language. And you know what? If you have a team of infrastructure-minded developers who want to do Rego and a team of business-minded developers who want to do Alpha and a team of, I don't know, AWS folks who want to do Cedar, then let them do in their own language, as long as there's a layer to sort of orchestrate or correlate the policies from a mainly from a governance perspective, not from a runtime perspective, then that's okay. And as a matter of fact, there's another initiative called IDQL that is spearheaded by a really good friend of mine, Jerry Gable, and former Axiomatics employee. And IDQL aims to be the orchestration language on top of these runtime languages. So that's also an interesting space to keep an eye on to see what's going to happen with orchestration.
That makes total sense. And yes, I think IDQL is all of a sudden in a very short period of time commanded quite a bit of attention. So that's a great thing. It's exciting to see that there's an appetite out there, right, to learn more and to know more and to see how we can go bigger, faster, stronger with all of this. And I think to that point, David, and that brings me to the next area of conversation and something that we've chatted about certainly on numerous occasions is around, okay, now we say we're talking about the challenges that authorization solutions are looking to solve. There is still, it feels like, a lot of obscurity perhaps around a lack of understanding, I guess, is what it really is around what it is authorization can solve. And at its core, a lot of what our market can do is solve challenges that organizations have around policy. But I really don't think that's very well understood. I know that we've talked before about some folks just don't associate authorization at all with policy challenges. And you have other organizations then that bring in an external authorization solution and think it's going to be their easy button, if you will, around all of their policy challenges. And it's really not that either. So that's a very long-winded way of asking you, David. I know you have an opinion about the entire policy lifecycle management conversation and the role that authorization should play. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you see this kind of helping foster a better understanding of policy and addressing those challenges?
Yeah, really, really good question, Kelly. And I think there's at least two angles that I want to tackle, or two reasons why customers go down the path of policy-driven authorization. And one of them is developer efficiency. As a developer, I don't want to have to rewrite code to tackle my authorization scenarios time and time again. I just want to externalize it. Much like as a developer, I don't want to have to build from scratch my authentication. I would rather have a utility, a library, or something, a service that would handle that for me, right? This is the same reasoning. But there's another dimension which you touched on, which is that oftentimes you have policies that come from potentially outside the organization or outside that developer's team around what can or can't happen. So if you take my entrance policy example or my entrance claim example again, it might be that you, the developer, you're writing an API to expose data to the customer, right? And so the customer, they have a website they can go to, they have a mobile app they can go to, and they can browse their insurance policies. They can browse it or create claims. They can view the status of their claims and so on and so forth. Employees can do stuff as well, like browse a claim, approve a claim, deny a claim, so on and so forth. And the naive way of doing this would be, okay, I, the developer, I'm going to develop an API, and yes, I'll be handling authentication through OAuth or OpenID Connect or whatever. And then I'm going to be handling authorization in my code. So I'm going to write things in my code in Java or whatever language I'm using. I'm going to say things like if customer ID is equal to owner of the claim, or if the amount is less than the approval limit for the claims processor, then da 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 da. What happens is the business side of the house, the business side of the insurance company might say, well, these are my requirements, and those might change over time. And they might change because the business changes, or it might change because of external factors, legislation, compliance, audit needs, so on and so forth. And so now the developer would have to rewrite those elements in their API, right? So they would have to launch or release a new version of the API. Now take that, and instead of hard coding it, extract it, externalize it into a policy-driven approach. And what happens now is you write a version of your policy. You do have a life cycle that needs to happen around the policy because the developer might be the one writing it, but of course it needs to be approved by perhaps the product manager. It has to be the business analysts need to be consulted. You could almost think of a RACI diagram around the policy life cycle management. And then eventually, you get a version 1.0 of the policy. What's cool is that the policy is just configuration, right? So creating a new version of the policy to tackle new requirements or to tackle changes in the requirements, that's a matter of minutes, if not seconds, as opposed to rewriting code and having to go through the life cycle of code management, code change. It's much easier to do that with policy. And that's the one of the most compelling aspects of doing policy. And it's probably one that people don't necessarily realize as much when the requirement or when our customers come to us and they say, oh, we need a proof of compliance with X, Y, and Z. They typically only think about the compliance needs, not the efficiency of the developer. And then when we come from the developer, they only think about the efficiency gains, not necessarily the ability to prove compliance with X, Y, and Z. But in fact, it's both. It's the best of both worlds.
That makes a ton of sense. And that really is, and I may be jumping ahead to future episodes, but it really is almost speaking to the case for DevSecOps and how to really empower a DevSecOps model through rethinking policy.
Yes.
And I think that's an incredibly worthy conversation and one I very much want to have with you. But I realize that we are almost at time here. So, David, thank you as always. We got through a heck of a lot of stuff, a lot of topics today. Insightful as always. Thank you very much for the time, and thank you to everyone who's listened. Please come on over to our LinkedIn page, visit us on YouTube, come on over to the website, and we'd love to chat further on this or any other authorization related topic.
Yep, feel free to reach out to any one of us. We're always happy to hear from you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Dynamically Speaking. Stay tuned for our next one, and in the meantime, check the show notes and connect with us on LinkedIn and YouTube. And visit us at axiomatics.com to learn more about our authorization solution.